Welcome, everybody, to the Cone of Shame Veterinary Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Andy Rourke. Guys, I got a great one today with Dr. Matthew Asciutto. This is real fun. And so we start off talking about his career as a traveling relief emergency veterinarian and what that's like. And that kind of dovetails into sort of his backstory with improv comedy. And so then we sort of start talking about how improv comedy sort of actually works in practice and the lessons he learned from that and what he takes into his emergency practice today. And it's a really very fun look at practice in general. And we talk a bit about comedy and humor, not homedy. We talk about comedy and humor. Anyway, guys, if you like to laugh, Matt is amazing. If you like to imagine interesting professions where, I don't know, maybe you do emergency in the middle of a metropolitan area and then next week you're in the middle of nowhere, yeah, this is a great episode. Guys, let's get into it.
This is your show. We're glad you're here. We want to help you in your veterinary career. Welcome to the Cone of Shame with Dr. Andy Rourke.
Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Matthew Asciutto. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
Man, I'm so glad you're here. I love getting to know you this year. You and I have gotten to talk a number of times, and you fall into that camp of people where I'm like, this is someone I just enjoy talking to, and I feel awkward just calling him, like when I'm walking my dog, and so I'm just gonna send him an email and say, "Can I podcast with you?" Then that will let me have the conversation I want. For those who don't know you, for the last 6 years, you have been a traveling ER relief veterinarian. So you have a company called Bindle Vet, and you fly. It's all over the U.S., right?
Right now it's mostly North Carolina, Virginia, and then I was doing like kind of all over.
Yeah, but yeah. you live in Colorado. You're in Fort Collins.
Yeah, yeah, and I've never practiced here. I am licensed in Colorado, never practiced in the state.
You've never practiced in the state you live in. That's fun. That's interesting. But you will because you are starting your own emergency clinic in Fort Collins. You want to tell me about that real quick?
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that basically all these things that I've learned from all these hospitals and traveling around, I'm like, well, we can do it better. And at some point I decided, I guess I have to actually try.
I would tell you, true story. That's how I started the Uncharted Veterinary Conference for like 15 years, I spoke at conferences all over the world. And I felt like some of them were amazing. And I would sit on the plane and I would be like, why was that so amazing? Like, what did they do? What were the circumstances that made that amazing? And other times I would fly away and I was like, whoa. That 4 days back. That was rare. But you could definitely, just in all candor, you could like some events, you just go, that was incredible. I mean, it's like in life, where you've gone to some parties and you've been like, that was a great party. And you've been to other parties, you're like, it's 8:30, I'm ready to leave.
There's like certain weddings like that in my life where I'm just like, that was fantastic. I'm going to remember that moment forever. And then others are like, what happened?
Yes. It does not correlate to the wedding spend. I think that's really important to note. One of my favorite weddings was in someone's backyard and it slapped. It was just a great time. And I have been to crazy over the top mega weddings and been like, that was a thing.
Yeah. And similarly, I mean, when I'm thinking about all these, you know, hospitals, one with the fancy toys and all that kind of stuff, there's pieces of it that are great. And then there's pieces of it that are not so great. And you can take all those little things. And if you, I don't know, if you think that you have enough of a point of view, trying to institute it yourself seems to be the thing to do. So I guess that's what I'm doing.
I think that's always been my position with relief vets in general. Like if you see yourself as a possible practice owner in the future, starting a practice, go and be a relief vet for a year or two. And you just see how everybody does it. And you very quickly will be like, I like that PIM system. I do not like this PIM system. I like that approach in the exam room or the way they leverage their technicians and not the way they do it. It's just, if you just go to vet school and then you go to one place, that's kind of all you know. But that sample platter of being able to go and look at how different people do things. I mean, so in the practices you've called on as a relief emergency vet, how much variability have you seen in how these places run? Is it night and day, they're different countries, or is it like, it's a 10% grade?
I would say that it's kind of more the former than the latter.
Yeah.
I do think that there is, you know, there's commonality, right? There's common experience that we all have, especially when it comes to ER, right?
Right.
Oh, it's busy and we feel like we can't see everything and we're questioning whether or not we're doing the right medicine at the right time for these people in front of us. Yeah. You and the rest of us, we all feel that way, right? But the cool thing, I mean, the way that I did it is I just sort of said yes to whatever opportunity came in front of me. Yeah. And that was everything from, you know, high level specialty ERs in the middle of, you know, metropolitan areas to like overnight only ERs kind of in the middle of nowhere. And then kind of everything in between, which then allows you to see, okay, well, what is the, what is required of me as a veterinarian? What is the expectation from the person across the way? And what's the relationship to the referring community? All that stuff. Who are these people here? Everything ends up being kind of different in those ways.
Okay. You know? So going into the metropolitan area ER and then out into the sort of middle of nowhere ER.
Yeah.
Do you think that having those two distinctly different experiences is that a plus for you? Was that a net neutral or was that like a detriment where you were like, man, it was just a different world and things that I had learned didn't carry over? Like, so yeah, sell me on the idea that this was, it sounds like it was positive. Sell me on the idea that what you learned in, you know, downtown Chicago was helped you in Easley, South Carolina.
Yeah, I think that what you see in real time is, you know, this thing that's being thrown around now is this like spectrum of care and things like that. But, you know, when I'm downtown, if I'm, you know, outside of Washington, D.C., I'm going to be elevating to these specialists for every small thing, right? And there is this sort of downside that exists in that, which is then you kind of, I don't know, you lose confidence in yourself a little bit where you constantly have to sort of refer up and out, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in the middle of nowhere and the nearest surgeon is 3 hours away, you're like, well, I guess I'm the surgeon.
Right? Yeah.
And I can use everything that I've seen from the people who, you know, have all the letters, who go to all the big conferences. I can use all of that as best, you know, as best as I can to these other locations, right? And so for me, it's kind of it's about application of that spectrum, but it's also about like, hey, look, I can do this too. And then, you know, by doing the things, you sort of say, oh, okay, I can do it. I'd never want to do it again.
Right. Yeah. No, I love it. So it's funny. I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but I don't mean to. But it's almost like, so I started practicing in D.C., outside of Washington, D.C., and there very much was this belief that I could punt so easily. Like there was just six other referral places around us. And again, that was kind of the culture too, is you just punt it up. You know, it was funny. The culture was very much like, yeah, sure. Just send it up. And if you don't watch out, you can fall into this mindset of like the kid who defers to the grownups in the room. You know all what I mean? Of like, yeah, oh yeah,
absolutely.
You know, I'm going to appeal to an authority figure here. I'm going to get a grown up, as opposed to when you're out in the middle of nowhere, that's it. It's like, there are no grown ups. You better figure out your own problems. And again, I don't mean to push that too far, but I would tell you the veterinarians that I have seen who are just, I mean, kind of James Harriet style, they're all the rural veterinarians. And like, I've heard that again and again, as the people, they're like, yeah, I'll totally do these surgeries or those surgeries. And I'll say, how did you kind of get started doing that? And they were like, well, there was no other option. And I told people, I'm not the right guy, but I'm the only guy you got. Do you still want to do this?
Right. That's exactly it. It comes out of necessity. And same with working overnights. Even if you are in the middle of kind of a, like, hey, there is a specialty hospital, even that you're working in, if for whatever reason you can't call people in, it's like, it's just you.
Yeah.
And I started doing relief so early in my career. I had so much of the, am I doing this right? Like I need somebody to tell me that I'm doing it right. But in doing overnights, you're just like, I guess it's me. Like there are no other people that I can talk to. So I have to make this decision.
Yeah.
And then
unless someone comes back and tells you didn't do it right, you're like, I guess I pulled that off.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and then there's the comfort of like, if you are in one of these specialty hospitals, you can then ask in the morning, am I a moron? Did I do this right? Would you have done something
exactly
different?
Right. When the internist comes in, oh, that would be hard for me. Every morning I'd be like, oh.
Right.
I would want to know, but also I would just not want to know. But I would want to know.
Yeah. Which is why, honestly, I approach it that way. I mean, this is sort of the benefit of then adding levity and humor in the things that you do, right? If I come in and be like, hi, am I an idiot? Did I do something? But I'm you know, tongue in cheek, I'm saying this, right?
Yes.
The idea is, it's like, I'm approachable. I'm not taking myself too seriously in this moment. I want to know. And also, you've been there as an internist. You know what it's like to be the, you know, intern or somebody early on in your career who has no idea what they're doing, who just has to do something.
Well, I think you're spot on. Like, that is really how you get coached, is if you put out the vibe of, I'm not taking myself too seriously, like, generally, genuinely, what do you think? You know, what are you going to do with this? And what should I have maybe consider? What should I consider next time? But again, that I do like that. No, I'm an idiot. Just lay it on me. What should I do? But they'll laugh, and then they'll give you honest feedback, as opposed to, you know, it's hard when you're a specialist and there's a GP that hands you a case and you're looking at it and you're like, do I tell them that this was not what I would have done? Do I just smile and roll with it? And you kind of take that off their shoulders of like, all right, lay it on me. How would you approach this differently?
So yeah, because they're human beings, and it's always awkward to tell somebody else, hey, you did something wrong, or hey, you got kale in your teeth, right? It's just like, these are awkward things. But if I ask you, hey, do I have kale in my teeth?
Yeah,
it makes it easier.
Yeah, well, I have 100% said to my technicians, look, if I ever look stupid, like I've got a booger or I expect, just tell me to please just tell me. Right. And I was like, that's like ground rules. If I ever come to work at your practice on day one, I'll be like, look, I don't take myself very seriously. If I'm doing something dumb or I'm wearing something dumb, it's probably not intentional. Just tell me.
Yes. Which is how I, as a relief vet, have approached, and I feel like found my place within, honestly, the industry, but within these jobs. You come in and you're immediately the guest. And as long as I come in sort of like that, you know, a little lower in the shoulders, and be like, hey, I'm just a moron vet who's doing my best. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if I'm doing something silly, just tell me. If I'm doing something that seems crazy, just tell me. And I think it's helped me a lot.
Well, I think that's so important too. And so let me just sort of say here, I don't know of anyone who's had a better background pre-veterinary training to be able to just go into radically different hospitals and just yes and your way into what they're doing. And so can you speak for that for a second? So you it's not okay. I do improv. Like, there's a local improv theater. I make drunk people laugh on Friday nights. Like, you have done real improv. Like, tell me a little bit about your background with improv. And so talk to me about that and kind of the timeline between improv comedy and then veterinary medicine.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that a lot of real improv is entertaining drunk people on Friday nights.
No, you don't get away from that.
Most of it. Yeah, exactly. Whether or not you're doing it in like the theater or if you're doing it in the comedy sports type. Yeah, it's just drunk people on Fridays. Yeah, when I mean, truly, I started doing it in high school because people forced me to do it. I had friends who would literally carry me to improv practice. And we had a little high school team, and it was National Comedy Theater was the name of it. I grew up in San Diego. And they made me do it until one day I said, please stop carrying me. It's embarrassing. I'll go myself. But that was that was sophomore year all the way through. And I don't think I was good. I don't know. You have no concept of that. But what it was it something that kind of became a part of me. And so when I went to college, I felt like something was missing, and I ended up auditioning for the same team, but the professional team that was there. So National Comedy Theater in San Diego, this is, gosh, I guess 2003, 2004, whatever. And I stayed doing that. They hired me. They said, sure, why not? Come on board. And I ended up through the following 7 years doing improv with them I started teaching at the high school league. I started, you know, being the person who was there Fridays and Saturday nights. And that was just my gig until we left for Chicago, just as a kind of a life choice. And I'd realized, actually, no, backing up a little bit, I did, I had an opportunity to teach at a arts academy. I was a teaching artist. I was an improv comedy teaching artist as an arts academy, trying to teach these kids how to do kind of more advanced improv. But I was just the fool who was, you know, doing the kind of sportscaster games on a Friday night in front of drunk people.
Yeah.
So I actually read all of the books, you know, Truth in Comedy and Impro by Keith Johnstone and all that stuff, to try to figure out, what am I going to teach these kids? And so when later on we moved to Chicago, I thought I should probably figure out if I was right. And so all of the places, so Improv Olympic and Second City, which are kind of these just major institutions
in Chicago.
You know, they all have training programs as a part of them. And so I went into those training programs and I, you know, I have almost a, you know, 7 years or whatever of improv experience behind me, plus high school. And I come in and I'm immediately humbled by I thought I knew, but I guess I didn't. And I thought I read this book the way that it was supposed to be, but then there's all this nuance to it. So then I spent the next, you know, probably year for both of those going through the training programs. And then I got into the house teams and, you know, you kind of end up in this world where now you're doing improv both in those institutions as well as around the city. And it was phenomenal. And then I decided to go to vet school. So I guess I actually got my master's degree in chemistry, or I was pursuing it kind of during that time as well. And so that was probably 3 years of doing improv in Chicago before leaving to Tennessee. My partner at the time got into vet school. And then the year after that, I'm just like, well, I guess I'll apply too.
Sure.
And that's the timeline.
Hey guys, did you know that I have another podcast? I am the host of the Uncharted Veterinary Podcast with my dear friend, practice management goddess, Stephanie Goss. We have been answering questions for years. We started a year before Cone of Shame. We take questions from our mailbag. We have listeners who write to us and they tell us about what's going on in their practice and we try to answer their questions. And they are all about communication, leadership, management, things like that. It's about working with clients. It's about working with staff. It's about working with your boss. It is about all of those sorts of things. I mean, we have everything from trying to establish some trust in your team when you're a brand new baby doctor out fresh out of vet school, to managing an employee with mental health issues, to how to give notice without the guilt if you are in a place you just can't be there anymore. We've got all that stuff. We've got hiring, firing, working together, working with clients, reviewing your systems, you know, getting your practice to run smoothly and efficiently, how to manage your time. All that stuff is there. Check it out. Like I said, 250 episodes. I hope that you'll check it out and enjoy it and love it. I just love making it. So let's get back into this episode.
So talk to me about improv when you're walking into these practices, right? So it seemed to me very much the story. What I heard you say was I kind of show up and then sort of yes and my way into it. I was like, oh, this is what we're doing here?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Gonna do it.
Improv is all about the, all right, here we are. I'm going to agree to the circumstance, to agree the situation that we're in, and I'm going to, you know, interact, right? I'm not going to be like, oh, no, that's not how I do it. I don't, you know, I come into a practice, like, I don't use Cornerstone. I have my own hymns. You could never do it.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of say, okay, what is going on here? And then how do I exist within this world that you've created? And that's just improv.
It was funny. I had a client today in the practice, and so I was talking to my technician and he was just kind of flustered and he was like, I'm not getting straight answers out of her, and I'm trying to remember what was going on with the dog. It was a senior dog, but it was like he was going in and he was asking her questions like, is he peeing in the house? And she says, well, he was, but then I got pee pads and now he just pees on them, so I guess not. And he was really bothered by that. He was like, that's not a straight answer. And I was like, look, you're going to have to roll with this. Like, you're just going to have to nod your head. But she gave about six answers like that. And he was just tied in knots. And I went in and I sat down and she was like, you know, that technician, I think my boy's really taken to him. He's genuinely a wonderful person. And I came back out and said, well, you want to really be confused. She likes you a lot. But
that's amazing.
You have to go in and just listen to the person and just kind of accept their worldview, and then being like, okay, this is how we're talking and this is what we're doing. And I'm going to ask a lot of very specific questions before we go forward.
Yeah. I think that you're right. I mean, especially with client communication, the other way that people talk about it is, you know, meeting people where they are and all that. But there is almost this kind of nuance that maybe you as also an improviser can see, which is that that's a bit that person's doing, right? Like in any other circumstance, if you as a character were just to be like, I'm going to answer your question, but in like this most circuitous way possible, that is now a bit. And that's the game. Yeah. And one of the things that we kind of talked about in Chicago, I guess this is like an IO thing, but what is the game of the scene? What is the game of this, you know, long form thing that we're doing? We always come back to that.
Yeah.
So you as a doctor, if you were to want to, right, you could also do some things like, we're going to do medicine in this hospital. not necessarily in this room, but definitely within these walls.
Yeah. Right. It's, yeah. But you're right. It's funny. I'd never thought of that. Every exam room is basically a scene, and every interaction is a bit. And it's just, you know, like you'll have those clients and they will speak to you like their cat is their child. Yeah. And I'm not going to correct them. And I'm not, you know, like I'm like, all right, we're doing cats as children. That's the game of the scene. All right. Well, let's get them in here. All right. Are you saving for college? Because that's going to come at you.
That is so powerful, because those things, if you can acknowledge just that little bit that they're offering you, right? Like they say, this cat is my child, and then they just kind of keep doing it. It's like, fantastic. Now we have a whole list of like saving for college, cat toys or baby toys, baby Bjorn carrying the cat around in the baby Bjorn, like, you know, all of these things you can now sprinkle in. And that becomes now, again, this bit that you're doing with the client. But really what it is I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
Right? I'm here for you. We're here together as two human beings talking. And now we can then make some recommendations about medicine.
Oh, yeah. I love that you say this, right? And so one of the things I've been thinking a lot about, I'm just going to ask you about, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about, Matthew, is like there's humor is so valuable in practice. Mm. And the ability to smile and find humor in just sort of talking to people. To me, it's absolutely mission critical. It's the only way I get through the day is just finding the humor. But you have to find it in a positive humor. I was looking at some social media stuff recently, and so there's all these veterinarians that are sort of on Instagram or TikTok and things like that. And I don't throw any shade or anything at all. But those platforms have really morphed, in my opinion, to reward bad behavior in a lot of ways. And the comedy, the humor in the vet space that seems to do well is generally kind of cutting humor. It's about, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. about sort of, boy, the clients are dumb, or boy, if it's from technicians, it's like, boy, the doctors are dumb. And, you know, and it's just, there's just kind of a lot of that sort of, honestly, kind of eye roll sort of humor. At least I see, my impression is that is what gets rewarded on those platforms. Mm. And I just want to ask you, when you look at humor and sort of how we use it in practice, to you, is there a good humor and a bad humor? Is there sort of a line between them? When does humor kind of go bad in practice, or do you think it can?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely can. I think that, and maybe this is just my style of humor, so I don't mean to maybe overstep in terms of what humor is overall, but I do feel like when we as team members within any situation, but, you know, as veterinarians in a client veterinary relationship or whatever, or even just sort of who your techs are and who you are, I think that the humor that we should be using is like collaborative, we're in this together type of humor. If we're ever going to make fun of something, I was actually just talking to a friend of mine yesterday who's an oncologist, and he was just like, we were talking about how frustrating certain mast cell tumors can be, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, that's funny. That's a funny bit. That's not at anyone's expense.
Yeah.
That is, you know, there's something about that, but it's like, we are in this together. We have this common experience and we're in this together, and there's not really an other, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that that works. In my opinion, I think that that's the humor that we should be using, if at all possible, within these situations, as opposed to putting other people down. Right?
No, I think you just gave me a really good rule of thumb. That humor with when there's an other, when there's an outside. I think if you're punching with your humor, I think that's probably bad. So yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I think it's a really good answer.
Right? We all really want to use it. And there is something that's kind of funny about the, like, metronidazole on the shelf just, like, beckoning you. Like, and you're just like, I can't. You know, and you have this, like, weird push-pull relationship. Like, that's funny, right?
That's so funny.
But it's not like, oh, people who use metronidazole are, you know, behind the times or whatever, right? Like, that's a judgment-based other type of thing. And I just don't think that that's... I think that in the moment it can be funny, but it maybe depending on how you do it, but I just don't think it's useful. It's not useful humor.
No, right? But oh man, but that's such a perfect example of metronidazole beckoning to you from the shelf, because like it resonates, and like my favorite humor is sort of inside humor. I don't mean to make people feel excluded, but the best stuff is the stuff that's really niche. And so that the metronidazole calling to you from the shelf, like I feel that so much. I was literally in the radiograph room today, and and we were going to do a cysto on this cat that was peeing outside the litter box. And of course, the cat comes in. His bladder's tiny. There's no urine. And the technician looks at me and goes, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I was like, "I know what old school Andy would want to do, and that's." Yeah. Send him home was antibiotics and send him home, which like, nope, that's not what we do. Yeah. That's what 1999 Andy would have 100% been on board with. We're not doing that anymore. Yeah. So anyway,
and then you have like this thing that now for me, it's in those moments where you're kind of outside of yourself a little bit, where now you can laugh on this little tiny bit that shows up in your mind, right? Like old school Andy hops on your shelf and is now, you know, be like, "Oh, do it, man. Just get just a little convenient.
Just won't hurt anything. Just try it. Just try it and see how it feels."
Right.
No. That's
right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I do think that, you know, when you look at, I've actually been thinking about humor kind of a lot over this past, you know, 6 months or year or so, and how I particularly use it. But it really is, it's like finding these small moments of connection that then can be something else, that I think there's a lot of power in that. And those things, you know, you can take a euthanasia and maybe you're not like guffawing, right? What's happening in there? But there's smiling, there's chuckling, there's like, hey, this is actually a good human moment. And it can just come from these little things. Like someone said to me the other day, and this was just horrible news that I had given them. And they said something along the lines of, you know, "I'm speechless," and that never happens. Like, "I'm never speechless," right? Which, by the way, that was her offer. She was the client.
she's giving you a lot to work with.
Right, exactly. And it's not, you know, you don't come in and be like, "I know, I could tell this whole time you've been talking," or whatever. Like, that's me against her. But just this idea of, hey, being speechless and that's something that never happens is something that you can kind of work with. And it's an opening, right? And that's an opening for humor. And I think things like that are present and can allow us to connect even more, even in bad situations.
Yeah, no, I think that that's true. Gallows humor. Emergency veterinarians are notorious for, right. Are known for some gallows humor. Do you ascribe to the idea that, again, it's not hurting to others, but do you ascribe to the idea that a shared laugh, if it's a dark laugh, is a good thing? Or do you think that there are things about gallows humor that maybe don't have a place in vet medicine?
Oh, I feel like if we are laughing and it's together, that it's okay. I'm sure that there's a line here, and I'm not going to be able to come up with
it. I don't know what the line is. I feel like there's got to be a line. There has to be a line. Right. At the same time,
we'll find it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll know it when we're well past it, and we're like, that was the line.
Right, right. Yeah. And like, you know, something small. You know, I know this is. I don't know. This sounds terrible, but like when it's a really bad, you know, a night and there's like a lot of euthanasias, or, you know, and then there's like this really critical case that I have to kind of take care of, I might say just sort of kind of to myself and around something along the lines of like, "Well, I gotta go murder this dog real quick, but then I'll be back and we'll deal with it." Right. And it's not like, for me, it's not, obviously, you know, I'm going to take this seriously.
Of course.
It's
not,
but in that way, for me, it sort of does take away the heaviness of it. Right. I'm obviously not committing murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, it just takes the moment, because then I'm going to be able to come back and sort of say, okay, cool. Like, now this is what we have to do to the dog and oxygen. This is what we have to do with this one who's breathing out, et cetera.
Well, yeah, I think you're spot on. I think a lot of people would sort of say, you know, humor like that, it breaks that tension that we all carry. And if you can just set that weight down for a second and everybody sort of laughs, then you can pick that weight back up and maybe move forward in a way that it doesn't drag you down the way that not setting the weight down does. So anyway, I think that's great.
I think light stuff is a way to do that. Like for me, I use a lot of silly language, like okie dokie and, you know, stuff like that. Like if something comes in and it's, you know, "Oh, we got to do this." And, you know, heart failure cases are like this that are really bad, right? It's like, okay, okie dokie, like, here we go. Or, you know, little things that are obviously they don't detract from anything, but they're definitely unexpected, that then does break that tension, which then allows us to focus, right?
Yeah.
It's on purpose. I don't want us to feel like we're balancing plates on top of sticks the whole time. We're never going to be able to do our job effectively. But if we can just kind of be like, oh, well, now I'm out of this cycle. Now I can focus on, you know, doing CPR and chest compressions and whatever that might be.
Oh, man. Dr. Matashuda, thanks so much for being here. Where can people find you online? Ooh, have you got a webpage for Inkwell or anything like that?
Not yet, but I will have a webpage that is fully functional in mid-June for Inkwell, which is my new veterinary practice. You can find me on thegreatestprofession.com. I have a podcast that's basically about the human behind the professional. So thegreatestprofession.com and also matashuda.com.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links in the show notes. Thanks so much for being here. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourselves, everybody. And that's it. That's what I got for you. Guys, I hope you enjoy it. I hope you got something out of it. Thanks to Matt for being here. Guys, thanks for coming along and laughing. If you are thinking about improv comedy, you're like, I might like to do that. I strongly encourage you. I love it. I have so much fun with it. It gives me something to do that's not vet medicine. It gives me a friend group that's not related to vet medicine. It makes me so much better in the exam room. It makes me better to work with. It makes me a better spouse and father. All of those things really do come out of skills, from learning to think on your feet, to talk to other people, to listen really intently. So anyway, I'll always be an advocate for improv comedy. If you're thinking about it, find an improv theater near you. Take some classes. Sometimes they have just 1 or 2 day weekend intensives. Think about it. Anyway, I would really encourage anybody who's in vet medicine, just think about it. Anyway, take care of yourselves, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye.